All right. First of all, we just want to say thank you, Isai, for coming and being with us. We think you're a superstar, really. And after talking to you the other day, I mean, we've corresponded a little bit, but I got off that call and I told Ty, I said, he's our family. This is our guy. So thanks for, I know you had a lot going on with your daughter. Thanks for making the sacrifice to be with us.
Thank you.
We're eternally grateful.
Appreciate it.
I'm eternally grateful for the work you've done in informing so many people who had no clue and just basically filling in so many dots, because that's what it takes, you know.
It's amazing. And that's what this documentary is about. So usually when we do roundtables, they're Zoom, and we thought, no, we need to get these people in person. There's something about a face-to-face conversation. We want people to see this. We want them to be informed and encouraged and give them calls to action. So what we want to start out with is each one of you just taking a minute, once again, to introduce yourself to the audience. And remember, Sean and Robert, the people watching, they may miss the first roundtable, but maybe they'll see this one. So we'll need you to just give them who you are and your heart in a minute.
In half the time.
So, yeah. Yeah. So, Isai, we'll start with you. Please introduce yourself.
Isai Morales. I'm an American-born actor of Latin Puerto Rican descent who's been working for over four decades and is obsessed with the search for truth, or what is real behind. Like, I love scratching below the surface of things. I've noticed patterns, and identifying patterns to me is something very important, because we're awash in a sea of mis and disinformation, and it's really good to develop a sense of discernment. So I've been working in Hollywood, quote unquote, Los Angeles, New York, theater, television, and film, and back to doing film, and hopefully after this, I will still have a career.
I love it. It's going to get bigger and brighter.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. And Sean?
So I am Sean Stone, Redux here. I started as a kid acting in my dad's films like JFK and The Doors and Natural Born Killers, and that gave me a certain pedigree in terms of media and conspiracy theory. So when I went to college, I ended up writing my thesis on the New World Order, which I was able to publish that a few years ago. And basically since college, I've been doing films, documentaries, hosting shows. I was on Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura, and then I did Buzzsaw, which was on Gaia, as well as Watching the Hawks for RT. And my most recent documentaries are Hollywood DC, Metahuman with Deepak Chopra, and Best Kept Secret, a docuseries that really gets into the nature of the power structure, as I see it, the cabal's game of sort of, you can call it, satanic agenda and anti-human agenda, and the different means that they use of controlling us as they see us as sort of sheep in their eyes.
Hmm. And we do lots to kind of support that too sometimes. Yeah. I wonder. Yeah. Sometimes I look at our fellow human beings and I'm like, are they right?
Well, that's actually, we can talk about that.
Dr. Malone?
So I'm Robert Malone. I'm a physician scientist. I have never been an actor in the past. Increasingly, I'm being sucked into that world. That's another story. I was trained at UC Davis in biochemistry, Northwestern University for my MD. My graduate work was at the Salk Institute Molecular Biology and Virology Labs in La Jolla and at UCSD. I was trained as my final training as a physician was in pathology at UC Davis. I taught pathology for a couple of decades at UC Davis and UMaryland Baltimore. And I did a postdoctoral fellowship, actually a number of them, but most recently at Harvard University in global clinical research and regulatory affairs. I'm a specialist in biodefense. I did a series of studies leading to 9 issued patents in the late 80s as part of my graduate studies that formed the foundation for the RNA delivery and RNA vaccine technology that includes the first reduction to practice. And so truly I am the original person that conceived of and demonstrated the technology that now forms the basis for these RNA vaccines.
Well, thanks a lot.
I'm accused of breaking the internet together with Peter McCullough by going on Joe Rogan, which prompted the ire of, I guess, the entire Laurel Canyon music scene of aged 80-year-old rockers, and have been very active in helping the world try to understand the technology, the risks associated with it, and now increasingly what's gone on behind the scenes that's led us to this place where governments globally, particularly in the West, and these transnational corporations and organizations have been willing to bypass ethical norms for informed consent, clinical research, and everything else.
So let me ask you this, guys, these vaccine mandates, right? We're seeing vaccine mandates. And Isai, let maybe start with you. You were talking before we began the roundtable about the Screen Actors Guild and how they're still pushing for vaccine mandates and there might be some kind of financial incentives. Just kind of share what you were talking about before.
Well, without saying anything that'll get me in any legal trouble, we do know that the CARES Act provides money to institutions and individuals in positions of power to implement their measures. You know, these supposedly safeguarding measures. And if you know science, and I have a not as well as these gentlemen here, but I have an obsession when I was younger with science. It was a thing that I loved, and I also had friends. I made a documentary that was never released, and I interviewed two people, Peter Duisberg and Dr. Carrie Mullis. I became very close with Dr. Mullis. We went to a Grateful Dead concert together on substances that he created. And no, all safe, but you know, he was that kind of brilliant genius who always had an issue with bureaucrats carrying water for the industries they were supposed to safeguard us from. You know,
and he was the inventor of the PCR.
That's right. If folks don't know, he invented PCR technology, polymerase chain reaction, and
received the Nobel Prize for it.
And in 93, absolutely. And he told me the story. It's a funny, I have a 15-minute tape that was unearthed of my putting a panel together in 1997 with him, Christine Maggiore, and two other activists, a gay gentleman and trying to get from all the different communities, and another scientist, I think Paul Philpott. And we were discussing the problems with the whole AIDS orthodoxy, which were similar to what's happening here, where you basically have technology like Oz, and you had to ask others, are you okay? Are you infected? Are you gonna live? You know, where we put our own personal sovereignty in the hands of experts who we assume have our best interests at heart. And he educated me quite a bit. Even then, when I introduced him, the first thing he did was tell me how I had everything that I said about him was wrong. I got this off the internet. He goes, first mistake. but he was a person dedicated, fiercely dedicated to uncovering what the truth was in anything. So it's like a social scientist, you know. He told me about global warming and the problems with climate alarmism in the 90s. When I was a climate alarmist myself, I was telling people in the 80s that if we didn't do something in 5 to 10 years, the expert says it's irreversible. And here we are 30 years later. And I still see the same patterns. And I see how people's best intentions are used against them. How our naivete is packaged. And then, you know, well, we have this technology, this industry set up. And they take good people's best intentions and they warp them. It's almost like an inverse, like what you were talking about, almost like a satanic way to inverse everything that we have been taught to believe is true, good, and beautiful. So being an actor, I find myself kind of an amateur sociologist, or maybe, you know, a professional one in a sense, because I study human behavior and motivations. So I noticed those patterns. And with Dr. Mullis, I have to say, he opened my eyes and he said many things. I have to look for the videos that I never like used, because I realized there was no market for the truth in Hollywood in a weird way. And you guys have done amazing work getting the truth about vaccines and cancer out. And you did it independently. But when you try to sell a concept that goes against the general narrative, you know, nobody wants to talk to you about it. And then you start getting looked at as, oh, really? You know, as suspect. So I put that away, and I always kept my thoughts of, you know, who he was. So getting all back to the mandates for our union, it's groupthink. We have a science committee. Meanwhile, myself and other very, very scientifically knowledgeable for actors, we're not on there. It seems like they're in ideologically and politically, as far as the board makeup, lopsided, and it's a rubber stamp thing. And as long as you're following the script, you're fine. But our own president now, Ms. Fran Drescher, who was on the other side politically on our group, she actually came out and said, why don't we take a look, a second look, a closer look at the science? Because everybody says the science is settled. When I hear that, I know they're not a scientist, because basically the whole point of science is to re-evaluate, to examine, you know, as things change.
And no, not according to Dr. Fauci.
Yeah, right. The science itself.
He is science.
He is the science. If you're against what I'm saying, then you're against science. I mean, this is absolutely, no, it's fascinating. I don't want to.
What would Mullis say about Fauci? That Mullis hated Fauci, right?
Mullis called him some few words, and he said, you know, he doesn't know jack, you know what, about science. He's never treated anyone. He basically does, he's a gatekeeper. And that's what we have. We have a lot of people.
Can I riff off of Please. That? Because of my role in the world, I'm becoming increasingly a source for the alternative broadcast media. And I've been on many, many interviews since Fauci made his decision that he's going to leave us, or at least leave the NIH in December.
We hope he might leave us.
That statement, I am science, okay? Well, there's the underlying issue of, you know, is he a sociopath, a psychopath, or just a narcissist? It is somewhere in that spectrum, I think is fair to say. But beyond that, if you look underneath it, what it is actually a true statement. I mean, there's the issue of science versus scientism, and he's a high priest of scientism, okay? But underneath that, when he says, I am science, it's actually a true statement. He embodies what has gone wrong with the scientific enterprise. He truly is modern science. The corporatist modern science is embodied in Tony Fauci. So we all, you know, cast shade and laugh at the silliness and the narcissism associated with that quote. And, you know, he layers it on, you know, following interviews. The guy has no self-awareness, apparently. But beyond that, it's actually true. He embodies what is wrong with modern corporatist science in the United States, and really in the Western world.
When people tell me, in response to my saying, you should look into this a little more, because I don't tell people what to do, because I don't take my medical advice from some actor. I go, I'm not giving you medical advice.
I take it from CNN.
I'll tell you one thing. MDs have killed more people in the last, you know, 80 or 100 years.
In the last 2 years.
And in the last 2 years, but also throughout history, doctors and their drugs. I'm just going to say, if it were alternative, quote unquote. I mean, that's another thing that was flipped around at the turn of the century with the Flexner Commission, or one of those things that the Rockefellers started, the American Medical Association. They took traditional therapies, medicines, you know, grandma, homeopathy, Ayurvedic, Eastern, you know, Chinese medicine, and they They took traditional medicine and called it alternative, and then they put allopathic in the place of the gold standard.
Or pseudoscience, as Wikipedia loves that word.
Oh, yes, pseudoscience. So I feel like I'm living in a world where we're being gaslit, projected on, like, so when
continuously.
Continuously, and it's so, the problem with propaganda, as I see it, is that it's layers upon layers. You can tell someone the truth about something, but then 80% of the rest of what we believe, and I have to say we, because I have to leave room for some things that I still believe that are gonna be debunked. Mm. So I think you need to keep an open mind and never be too sure of anything except your own feelings. And even those change. But getting back to Fauci, I mean, in the 80s, he was the one saying that it could be this, it could be that, AIDS could be spread in casual contact. You know, I mean, he has the ability to completely turn around whatever he says without, like you said, with no self-awareness. Yes, no, absolutely. And he says
actually,
it with such confidence.
Bobby Kennedy's book documents when he really got put in a corner. There was a moment in time when he was in danger of losing it all.
Even Pelosi was after him at that point, wasn't
it? Exactly. And he flipped. He was contrite, said that, you know, we'll change things, we'll look into these. This is when the AIDS activists were really pushing him. And you'll recall the Dallas Buyers Club, right? Mm-hmm. It was the movie about this.
Yes.
And what they did was really destroy the validity of the underlying clinical trials. They had aggressively tried to get him to address and enable the use of a number of different medicines other than AZT. And he absolutely refused it. The behavior has been consistent. Really, it's
Remdesivir, it's the same thing.
It's as if AIDS was a trial run for how he's managed COVID. And Bobby Kennedy's book, I think, really documents that well.
Yeah, absolutely. But the funny thing is that when I talk to people, like, let's just get back to the union thing, right?
Yeah.
And you try, because early on, I was hip to this. I mean, COVID did for me, it allowed the rabbit hole. It allowed me to go deep because we were all locked up. We couldn't do this, we couldn't that. So me and the internet became very intimately acquainted. And I dug deep down and I noticed the patterns, the same thing. You had to take a test, you know, to tell you whether you were infected or not. In other words, you no symptoms, but they'll tell you in 10 years, this is going to happen. So there's a bit of hypnosis at work here. Suggestion. There's a man named Michael Elner who wrote great books about the power of hypnosis in society, how the witch doctors in primitive societies would point the bone of death at their tribe members, and about 80% would die overnight because of the nocebo effect. The fear, the stress, you know, you use up your adrenal, you know, I mean, they would die. And the 20% that didn't, they would come up with an excuse that, well, God favored you or whatever it was. The point is the power of the witch doctor was extremely important. And I saw it happen with folks that were told they were going to die. And there were folks that said no. And they changed their lifestyle. They changed their food and habits. And I had a friend who was told he was going to die by a big doctor in New York, changed his lifestyle. A few years later, he had to get retested again for something he needed to do, and he was negative. And he thought, how could this be? And the doctor went out of the room, came back and said, oh yeah, no, that was an Epstein-Barr test. He lied. He goes, I'll never forget when he told me to get my affairs in order because I was HIV positive. That's what he said, that the doctor told him. You don't tend to forget those details. And he said he lied to my face. And this was a guy who was partying with certain drugs that he stopped. He stopped doing cocaine, he stopped doing, you know, just things that are immunosuppressive. If you look at the AIDS epidemic, it was trailing the pattern of cocaine and heroin overdoses and usage.
And amyl nitrate.
Amyl nitrate. You know the relationship between poppers and the Kaposi sarcoma? I noticed this thing myself when I would see people with the purple splotches on their arms talking about, when they would walk up to me as I was talking to someone, you know, proselytizing, saying, listen, you know, And I, you know, blah, blah, I did it, and he had a bottle in his hands, and he was sniffing this stuff, like, on the street one night. And I noticed this is a cancer of the blood vessels. But what does amyl nitrite do? It opens your blood vessels. And I had a friend in that community who told me that he would get it in his, that he knew people getting it in the hands, the neck, and the ankles. I don't want to explain too much what he told me about the ankles. And he explained that they would hold these things during their passionate affairs, and they would spill, and they would hold certain parts of the body, and those were the parts that ended up with these things. So there's a connection there. And Peter Duisberg was the first one to really promote, the father of
people. And what happened to Peter Duisberg? You said you interviewed him.
Yeah. Thank God he was tenured.
I lived through that. This is my origin story as a scientist.
So you know he was tenured. He was protected
UC Davis
at Berkeley. 83,
84.
Yeah. Well, he was at Berkeley at the time that I met him.
I know.
And at one point, I picked up Peter Duisberg, the father of retrovirology, basically, the first man to map the oncogene, I believe, as well, and to coin the retrovirus. And I had him in the back of my car and Carrie Mullis talking about how DNA strands were like spaghetti and how like they were separate. I mean, I'm like driving my car going, I wish I had this video. I'm like, these giants of science. And yet these are, when people are really honest, they don't make it to the top. It seems like
it was worse than that. Huh? As you know, Tony Fauci directly destroyed Duisberg's career.
Yeah, he did.
For raising the question about whether or not it was human herpes virus 8 and not the HIV virus.
And I think they finally admitted or said that it was the sixth one. Because the thing about, this is hard, I'm sure if you're watching this, you're not aware, it's kind of hard to follow. Mm-hmm. Kaposi sarcoma was the first thing that identified AIDS visually. When you saw Rock Hudson with those purple splotches, everybody said, oh my God. It was tantamount to watching the Chinese guy at the bus stop fall flat on his face in that video. That's when I said, oh my God, they've finally done it and released something out there that's just killing people. But notice it didn't happen here. People didn't die.
That was propaganda.
It was propaganda. And the thing is that people didn't die here at home or on the street. They died mostly in hospitals, where hospitals were incentivized financially on 4 points. Call it COVID, whether it was or not. Put them on remdesivir. Get them on ventilators, that's 39,000 or something, and then the death certificate. You have 4 points where the hospitals could make money, where if it was just the flu and 10 people came in and 10 people left, they would make no money.
One of my favorite statistics was one of the Colorado counties said that like 40% of their gunshot victims had died of COVID. And remember the famous case in Miami of the motorcyclist? I mean, it was...
Yes!
Nuts.
With and of has become a big thing. So when I try to tell folks, I knew Carrie Mullis. He explained to me that the test was not to be used to diagnose people. It's an inference. It's really a what you guys call surrogate markers that you're looking at, because you can't count the actual thing. So you count things like if you want to count how many shoes there are in a town, you see how many shoelaces or there are certain surrogate markers that can suggest to you what it is. So it's not to be used without clinical symptoms. And it's not to be used to diagnose a disease. It's a tool that could help identify something, but it's not like a test in the normal sense of it where you're looking for it. I would try to tell my people that and people did not want to hear it. They would just look at me like some dumb actor who doesn't know what he's talking about. And it's painful. Especially now that everything we predicted is coming to pass.
So what's happened at SAG-AFTRA?
What's happening, unfortunately, is that there seems to be a wall of intransigence. No one will take us up for a debate, like no one took up Carrie Mullis for a debate. And I think people probably run from you from a debate. People don't want to talk about it. They just want to follow the script, the headlines, whatever the sheep are doing.
Well, there's a deep psychological implication, and I mean, it's clear, you've seen it in studies, but they've convinced groups of people, like, you know, 10 people in a room, and they'd be like, okay, these lines, you know, which line of three lines is equal to that line, right? And it's clearly one line, and they'll convince 7 out of 10 people against their own eyes.
And groupthink, yes. Yeah,
this is the Desmet hypothesis, is they functionally are hypnotized.
Yes. When the media repeats the same message over and over again.
Because the point is that we're now at a place where it really is, like, I hate to say bad shit, but like you're sitting there going, okay, so everyone who's been vaccinated, they've all got COVID now. Double vaccinated, or whatever, double boosted, Fauci, everyone you know has had COVID now. What is the point of forcing anyone to get this vaccination? And you can't get get a response.
Here's the one.
You can't.
But this is what they try to tell
blank
you.
Blank stares.
And but Sean, this is what they'll try to tell you. They go, well, it lessens. We never said it doesn't spread. It just lessens the symptoms.
But that doesn't matter. The point is, why do I have to get it?
Yeah, but to his point, so that has been the fallback position.
It's right? It's about protection.
Well, it's about protection from severe disease and death. Mm-hmm. That's been the modified limited hangout, right? At first, it was going to, according to Biden, if you got your jab, you would be completely protected.
Everybody.
Okay. So, I said this on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial.
Yes, I saw
that. That Omicron is the vaccines are not protecting against infection, replication, and spread, which the Washington Post called me a liar for saying. My point is, you mentioned that the fallback has been that it prevents severe disease and death.
Right.
Here's the problem. Data from all over the world now is demonstrating that the majority of people that are hospitalized and dying are the fully vaccinated, and it appears that the more inoculations, I refuse to call this a vaccine now, inoculations you've received, the higher your risk.
Yes.
Okay, so there is a dose-dependent risk for hospitalization and death that's being revealed in data all over the world and in selective states in the United States. The CDC is still not being fully open and transparent about the data, despite what Rochelle Walensky says. But that storyline that the vaccines will prevent you from experiencing severe disease and death is clearly false.
Right.
But can I tell you? Okay, you first, but there's a way that it stays alive.
Yeah, but again, you're still getting at the point that we know, but people that, even if they don't want to look, they don't want to see the data, what is the point of saying, okay, we know vaccinated, boosted, double boosted, can still get it. Why does it matter that everyone else has to do it?
And to your point,
that's the question.
The new CDC guidance says that there should be no distinction made between the vaccines.
Correct, but many unions are still, like SAG-AFTRA, right, are still saying, can't blind, deaf, and dumb. I can't see. I'm just going
to
continue.
Over last week, I've been to both San Jose, where I gave a lecture, and to Long Island. So I've flown into LaGuardia and into SFO. Both locations, LaGuardia, they are mandating masks. Both locations, people are walking around masked. Flying back from San Francisco, half the plane was, in my flights, very few people wear masks now. But flying back from San Francisco, half the people wearing masks, and they would not look the unmasked in the eye.
It feels like a cult. That's what I'm saying.
I'm completely concur.
Right. That's what it is.
It's cult-like behavior.
It's a cult of personality.
Personality, but like identity. I'm a Democrat.
That's what I meant.
A Democrat. I got vaccinated. I did the right thing. You know, I wear the mask. It's almost like
there was a fascinating editorial in the New York Times in which the author, this is a guest editorial, was basically saying that it was unfair that after all the sacrifice she had been through with masking and everything, that the CDC would modify these positions. The most egregious one, you know who Lena Wen is, right?
I have a problem with that person.
Okay.
serious problem.
So fascinating. Yeah, she said a bunch of really strong things.
And
if you're not vaccinated,
if
you're not vaccinated, you should be forced to stay in your home and things like that, okay? Now she's come out with a moderated position that once again is very aligned with the CDC. I'm shocked. And she was gonna speak to the Professional Association for Public Health. And she was attacked. There's a petition now with over 1,000 signatures because she is now speaking the CDC party line that there's no difference and people should be given the latitude to choose. She's being accused of being a racist, a eugenicist. She's being accused, this is in a petition, to get her to not be able to speak. The point is, they're turning on themselves.
Yes. Yes, they're reading their own. The weird thing is that I don't want to hurt anybody. And this thing makes you want to, like, hurt people. It's weird. It's one of the most divisive things. When I saw her talking, I was like, oh my God, you're targeting people for being healthy.
Right.
And the thing, to get back to the whole thing, well, it reduces the spread. I really want to take a minute here to talk about this, because the flu vaccine, that whole notion, you know. How would you know? There's no way to know that if you didn't take it, you would be fine. Because I haven't yet, but I got something that could have been COVID, could have been Omicron, it's bedridden, lost the smell a bit, some taste, but it was bad, but I was fine after 2 weeks. Had I taken the vaccine or a placebo, I could have said, thank God I took that shot, because it wasn't as bad as death. Precisely. You see what I'm saying? Well, it's an illusion.
Here's how you know, though. In 2021, there were more deaths than in 2020.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's interesting.
And that's this all-cause mortality or excess all-cause mortality signal that's coming out.
Yes.
What's fascinating is, people ask me, what does it feel like to be vindicated? And I'm like, I wish it wasn't the case. I wish these vaccines were safe and effective.
But can I say, this vindication is limited to the people that watch. Because the majority of people that follow those rules have no clue of what's going on.
Well, that's what I was trying to get at.
The information is not getting to them.
It can't.
And what is coming through, these things, the CDC, they're refusing to acknowledge that people like yourself and others have been right all along. It's ego gets involved here. All of a sudden, it's Mark Twain. It's easier to fool someone than to convince them they've been fooled.
But that's exactly goes to that whole point about the people that are vaxxed, boosted, double boosted, getting sick, and then not even having to be like, you know what, maybe all this vaccination doesn't really work. Instead, the narcissism, or just say ego, of, no, I'm right, I did the right thing, and I didn't die.
I did it for you. That's the other thing, the great guilt trip. I did this for you.
To protect your
grandmother. I'm protecting you. You're a POS because you're being selfish. And I try to tell people.
That's exactly how it was marketed.
That's right. Oh, you're being selfish.
People were guilt tripped into taking it.
Horribly. People who knew what I knew still took it.
And so they were, we call this coercion.
Yes.
Okay, that's the technical term for it. And also the suppression of information, whether it's Twitter or Facebook, deplatforming groups that were speaking about their vaccine injury, et cetera, that absolutely prevents informed consent.
It does.
So they have actively denied the ability of people, patients, our friends, you and me, to get the information that we would need in order to make an informed decision.
Yes, a well-informed decision, because they'll misinform us. And there you go, you were informed, it's good, it's safe, it's effective. That's not the information. If they don't know they're getting bad information, they won't know. But there's one other thing I want to say after you speak, that's a trick of theirs, and nobody talks about it much. Very few people talk about this mechanism, which is how people continue to believe the lie, the great lie. But please, you were going to say something.
No, carry on.
Okay. I'll talk to people and go, you know what? I don't believe it. Nobody I know has died, and I took the vaccine. I'm fine. And I go, well, are you aware that this is an active experiment? And in an experiment, you need control groups. Are you aware that they are not going to, if this really is what we suspect it is, which is a slow kill, potential culling of certain people in the population, they're not going to give it to everyone, so that people like yourself say, I took it, I'm fine. Mm. Are you aware that Vioxx and certain other drugs that were FDA approved, went through all the safety trials, got the stamp of approval, then got pulled because they killed 50,000 to 500,000, the number is arguable, and not everyone who took that medication died. Mm-hmm.
But are you also aware that it only took about, what, 50 cases in the 70s to stop the hundreds of millions of vaccines that were made for the swine flu? So how come 50 cases can stop it then, but 40,000 that we know of in the United States, plus many more, and if you talk to other folks, they say millions of people are dying, but the media refuses to ask the question, were they vaccinated? And I think the media, unfortunately, is complicit, which is what our biggest
problem
is.
I'd say that's, you're actually soft pedaling it.
Yeah. Ah, wow.
Okay, we're now in an environment.
It's war.
Because of the failure of the corporate media business model, right? Over the last decade, one of the big stories has been the failure of the business model for large media and all of the turbulence and turnover that's happened with that. And these large media corporations have been sold and resold and are now basically all controlled by the three main hedge funds, yep. Vanguard, State Street, and BlackRock,
yep.
Which also happen to have board control over the pharmaceutical industry.
Military industrial complex.
And tech.
Yep.
Okay, so they all function as basically subdivisions of one corporation. And no surprise that the media, which is being, to significant extent, subsidized by the pharmaceutical industry,
yes.
as, by the way, is our entire electoral system, okay, no surprise that the media doesn't want to bite the hand that feeds it.
That's right.
And so what's happened now, I think it's important to look for the silver lining here. People are getting so discouraged.
Yes.
They're so overwhelmed. There's so much negative that we've all been subjected to that it's really useful and I think important as leaders, as thought leaders, that we try to find good stories embedded
yes.
within this. And I think one of the good stories is the growing awareness
yes.
of the manipulation of information and thought by corporatized media. And just to illustrate it, not to brag, CNN, in their primetime broadcasting, often reaches down to about 500,000 per day. I routinely hit north of 500,000 per day, every day, 7 days a week with my Substack. Okay,
wow.
The point is not that my Substack is so great. The point is that alternative media, this decentralized media environment that's emerging and has really been
accelerated. Thank you, Joe
Rogan, right? Well, in many others, but yeah, I did get a big pop after
Rogan.
Oh,
yeah, I'm sure you did.
is that, but it's not just me,
yeah.
Okay? It's as we're seeing corporate media die because of people switching from cable and going to seeking their own media sources, we're having the rise of a diversified media landscape and the rise, like with this broadcast that you're putting together, the rise of the ability to reach people because they have become disenchanted with the propaganda that they're constantly subjected to. I use the term fear porn, and I didn't invent that. It's actually a psychological term.
Yeah.
And it's, I think it's really useful. We've seen it in monkeypox explicitly. The weaponization of fear for profit and control.
But it's an ancient practice as well.
But it is a refined business model
now
in the current situation.
But it doesn't seem like it's taking hold with monkeypox. I mean, it's funny, it's funny, but it's like also kind of like confounding when they have articles like, I'm a straight man, but I've engaged with gay sex, so this is when I got monkeypox, to warn you other straight men. Is it going really?
Straight to the gay bar.
All the fear about children getting it, right? I've run into, because I've put out multiple articles from the very outset, from the very first CNN broadcast, where they took pictures of smallpox and broadcast it as monkeypox.
Of course.
Okay? And I tracked down and documented that the Bill and Melinda Gates-funded Gavi organization was asserting 10% mortality when that's clearly not the case, okay? So I was able to document the fear porn and was on multiple broadcasts. And I think that we've been able to really damage the legitimacy on this storyline, but they put out that as part of this fear, there was a time when they were really pushing that children could get this.
Oh my God.
And I was being approached by people all the time that were frightened out of their gourd that this was going to happen, and they had to get these vaccines, and their children had to get these vaccines. And remember, they have now the smallpox vaccine, and I'm intimately familiar with all these because I used to work for DOD when these were being developed, okay? And I had that portfolio. They have now taken these smallpox vaccines, which have been licensed without any evidence that they're effective for monkeypox, okay, under emergency use authorization, and they have now made emergency use authorization extend to children, okay? And they are doing things like subcutaneous, low-dose sparing injection, for which there is absolutely no safety data. And that's now apparently the route for administration to your children.
It's less scary.
It's all based on fear and fear control.
Well, hey guys, you know, the great thing about this roundtable is that truth trumps fear, right? We share the truth, it's gonna make people less afraid because there's not the big boogeyman to be afraid of.
So, thank you.
Dr. Malone, I appreciate you ending with the silver lining, because that is some silver lining. And I just want to say the chemistry between you three guys has been amazing on this roundtable. I wish I could bottle it and patent it and sell it. I'd be a billionaire.
I'm honored to be with the two of these.
Unfortunately, we don't have any more time for any more chemistry. We're going to have to
we'll continue the chemistry at dinner.
We'll continue the chemistry, but we appreciate you guys. This has been so informative, and the interaction was great. So we really appreciate you guys joining us for this roundtable.
Can I say one last thing to close off the return to work authorization protocols? The good lining, the silver lining, is that lawyers are now taking this fight to the Supreme Court, and in the courts, if you have honest judges, they see how our personal sovereignty, you can't get more personal than your DNA, is being compromised, and the Nuremberg Code and other things is horribly violated, and they're winning. And I will tell you, I don't care who you are, you know, my employers, I love you for feeding me, but please don't get in the way of my God-given identity, which is my genetic makeup.
Personal autonomy.
Yes.
That's right.
It's personal sovereignty.
This is sovereignty.
Yeah. And if they can do that, and if they can do this to so many people under fear, they can do it to anyone. And it's this generation that has got to hold it. And stop.
The line.
Yes, because this industry, through vaccines, has been able to seed their profits for decades to come. Just know
hold
that.
Hold the line.
Hold the line. So
the
thank
line.
You.
Thank you for being leaders.
Thanks, guys.
And standing in the gap for the children. For the next generation, we've got four of them.
Yes.
And we want to hand them a more free, happy, healthy world.
Yeah.
We believe you're contributing to that. So thank you so much, each one of you.
Thank you. Thank you.